You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and I want to thank you all for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and this is the Tuesday show, pre-game two. We are in Milwaukee. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com and the Rain and Jays, joined by my MassLive partner, Tom Westerholm. What's up, Tom?
What's up?
So we're here covering the Celtics and the Bucks. Celtics taking game one easily. You weren't on the podcast when we did the post game.
Correct.
So why don't you share some of your thoughts on game one? Anything stick out for you besides, you know, Al Horford being amazing?
Well, I mean, Al Horford being amazing was basically kind of, I'm not going to say it was the story of the game, but it was a big one because, it, you know, even beyond just the fact that he's really good at basketball, it kind of confirmed all of the things that people who thought the Celtics had a chance in this series believed, which was Horford is going to not neutralize Giannis because, I mean, that's not going to happen again. Like, he's not going to, it's not going to be that good again.
Right.
But he's going to be able to guard him one-on-one for this entire series. Like, I think, or, you know, for most of the series. I think that much is fair to say. And him guarding Giannis one-on-one makes a huge difference. And really, you know, this Celtics team is so dangerous against the Bucks because Horford can do that. And because right. They can match up with the other guys. And then on the other end, obviously, you know, they just picked Milwaukee apart. I don't think Milwaukee's defensive schemes are well-suited for the Celtics at all. Between their insistence on giving up jumpers, which the Celtics love,
yes,
and their insistence on giving up pick and pops to Horford, which Horford is perfectly happy to take, like he'll
very good
open,
at it.
pop, like yeah. You know. So, you know, I still think this series is going to be a dogfight. I think that was a one game. You know, I think that was the Celtics punching the Bucks in the mouth after a wildly easy series against the Pistons. And
yep,
the Celtics, you know, they got tested against the Pacers. I think that made a difference. People talked about how, like, oh, it was a sweep.
Good point.
No. They got tested against a good defense, bad offensive team. The Celtics took advantage of that,
mm-hmm,
but they still had to work for those wins, and the Bucks did not have to work for those wins. So I think that made a difference as well. So those are kind of my overarching takeaways. I think this series is still going to be a tough one. I think it's going to go several games. You know, I don't think it's going to be five on either side by any means, but I do think that, you know, anybody who thought that the Celtics had a chance to win this series was right. They can win this series.
Right. They absolutely could win the series. It's not like Paul Pierce said the series is over.
No. Paul Pierce is wild right now.
But it's certainly not over. But I can see why people are excited about how the Celtics looked in game one because of basically everything you said, that the Celtics just match up their strengths, match up with everything that the Bucks want to give up. And on top of it, they're scheming, I think, very well to take advantage of how the Bucks play. And one example that I came up with was Aaron Baines, who we've talked about. He's kind of running this like a fullback. If you watch some of how he plays, and he only played 9 minutes, mostly because of the blowout.
This analogy
would
make a lot of sense if I knew what a fullback did, but
like a lead blocker.
Not a football guy over here.
So he, with the Bucks playing their drop pick and roll coverage, the Celtics have employed, and it's not just against Milwaukee. Baines has done this before, but they're really employing a style of pick where it's like basically Baines is sealing the guy off.
Right.
So the pick and roll happens for people who may not, if just watch for it when Baines is playing. Pick and roll happens. Baines rolls to the rim. And if he doesn't get the ball, then he seeks out the defender who has dropped. And that defender drops deep into the lane. And all Baines does is just posts him up and just keeps on pushing him and takes advantage of, as he said to me, the taking all the ground that they give up and just clearing out a lane for the guy to get to the rim. Gordon Hayward got a layup. Jaylen Brown missed the layup. But it's something to watch for. Baines is great at it. Other guys are going to do it. If they keep playing that drop pick and roll coverage, that is a way to neutralize it. Just send a guy at the guy who's dropping, screen him off, and now he's not there to protect the rim. So scheme-wise, the Celtics are able to take advantage of things. Now, the one thing I saw today was the somebody, I forget who it was, that tweeted that the feel from Bucks practice was there's not a lot to change. We just need to do the things that we do better and we'll be okay.
Yeah, that was I believe that was Matt Velasquez from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who does a really good job covering them. And he talked to Giannis about it. And Giannis was the guy who said, let's not change anything. Let's not overreact to game one, which,
yeah,
like, I'm not saying that the Bucks need to be like, the sky is falling, the earth is on fire, you know, the glacier's melting. I'm not saying the Bucks have to be like that, like, but they do need to be, like, I think they need to make changes.
Yes.
And I think that they are in real danger if they don't switch things up. And Giannis might have just been like talking, you know, he might have just been sort of like bravado, like, no, we're fine. We've been great all year. Like that. And Mike Budenholzer might have a completely different take on the situation, which would be fine. But I will say that if the Bucks don't change things, they are in danger of going down 2-0 with both of their games having happened at home, at which point they're in a lot of trouble.
Yes.
The Celtics probably aren't dropping both of the games at the TD Garden. Like, they're probably taking at least one of those, and then Milwaukee's got to deal with a 3-1 against a team that can limit their superstar. Like, the Bucks have to, they don't have to panic, they don't have to freak out, they have to make some changes. They have to find better ways to open up Giannis. They have to get guys in there who are not Pat Connaughton shooting 1-for-7 from three. Like, they like Pat Connaughton can't be your leading three-point taker in this series. Like, they have to do some things differently, and I think they will. I think he's probably just talking. I think, and especially these guys don't want to give up their game plans. Like, none of them want to be like, oh yeah, so we're going to switch X, Y, and Z, and that's going to make this difference. You know, it sounds better. It's a better soundbite to be like, no, we're not going to change anything.
Sure.
But if they don't, yeah. I mean, and Mike Budenholzer has been a pretty inflexible dude, so I'm not like 100% confident in that.
Right.
But
that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah. So I'm not like 100% confident in that, but I do think if you look at that game one, even an inflexible coach, I feel like, would have to admit, like, okay, like, there are some things I have to change, and maybe those things will make a difference because you have the MVP of the league.
From their perspective, I will say, you got to think that some of those shots that they got would fall that didn't fall. Not if Pat Connaughton takes them. You got to get Eric Bledsoe to just be more. You just got to get him to be better than what he was.
Which I get, but we now have a playoff series plus a game of him. We have 8 playoff games of him not being good against the Celtics.
Right. So, but he's been good for them
this year. He's been really good.
So he needs to be good for them. That's just, you go back to the Pacers series. Why were the Pacers so good even without Oladipo and some of the things that they did? Well, you got guys like Bogdanovich and Sabonis who did some of those things that they did well. And the Celtics took that away and they limited Sabonis on the boards, and that's part of a big reason why they won that series. So Bledsoe was very good during the regular season, but take that away and now you have a liability, for lack of a better term, for them. And the way the Celtics are playing defense, if Giannis isn't doing what he is normally doing during the regular season, which is driving, attacking, creating so much havoc in the paint that he requires all five guys to just kind of suck in, and then he kicks. If he can't do that, if that wall that the Celtics are building is effective enough to keep him from getting to the rim, then the drive and kick game doesn't happen. And why are the Milwaukee Bucks such a good three-point shooting team? Because of the drive and kick. Like, that alone is responsible for a ton of Milwaukee's points. Why don't we take a break? Because we're going to talk about Malcolm Brogdon possibly coming back in game three. Part of it's related to this because I looked at some of the numbers with Brogdon and the driving kick from Giannis. And so it's all related. So we'll do that right after the break. First, those of you, I've talked about this on the podcast before. I used to be in charge of hiring people, which is insane to think, but it was true. And I had piles of resumes on my desk. And let me tell you, there's nothing more mind-numbing than trying to go through and figure out who's got the best qualifications for it. And so many people have the best qualifications in equal quality. It's so hard to just go through everything. So it's a challenge. If you're a person who is looking to hire somebody, you know, like, it's difficult. But there is now a place to go that didn't exist when I was hiring that you can go, and it's simple, it's fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates, and it's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't just stop there. Their powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. So you're not just blasting out, hey, I'm hiring, and hoping somebody applies. They go and search for candidates, and they invite people to apply for your job. As those applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one of those and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. Can't tell you how important that is, because it's easy to miss things in the pile of bullet points. So their technology to get you the great match is really helpful. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. So right now, all of the listeners of the Locked On Celtics podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So we found out today, Monday, that Malcolm Brogdon is looking much more like the Malcolm Brogdon that the Milwaukee Bucks know, which we watched him go through a workout before game one. I thought he looked okay. I thought he looked pretty good. So he's not going to play game two. But if Milwaukee can come back and win game two, even the series, getting Malcolm Brogdon for the rest of the series does add a significantly different element, because you're talking about hitting those shots. He's a 50-40-90 guy. This is a guy that they hit 43% basically of his three-pointers, 42% of catch and shoots. And the important thing to me is Giannis, the majority of his assists have gone to Brogdon.
Yeah.
And 85 of Brogdon's assisted makes came from Giannis. Like, they are the guys that work together extraordinarily well. And those driving kicks, if they go to Brogdon, it's significantly different than going to Sterling Brown or Pat Connaughton.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting that this isn't a small sample size thing where he's taking, like, you know, he's averaging like 9 points a game. The guy's averaging like 16 points a game for Milwaukee this year. Like, it's, he's a real threat. One of, I'm trying to think, after Giannis and Middleton, it's basically Brogdon who is the toughest loss. Like, for a guy to miss significant time, he's the toughest loss for the Bucks because of his floor spacing, because of his defense, because of all the, you know, just how solid he is as a player. Like,
right.
He's just a very, very solid, you know, point guard, combo guard, whatever you want to call him. And so, yeah, I think getting him back in there, I think that makes a huge difference. I think it's one of the reasons why the Celtics have been preaching how, I mean, they would preach this anyway, but I think it's one of the reasons why tomorrow's game is so important.
Yeah.
You know, if they, if Brogdon comes back and it's a 1-1 series, I think things shift back, you know, maybe in favor of Milwaukee. I mean, the Celtics still have all those advantages, but they don't have Marcus Smart, who is the type of guy who could really help against somebody like Malcolm Brogdon. And mm-hmm. obviously, Jaylen Brown would do a good job against him, too. And, you know, we even saw like Tatum do a good job against Darren Collison. Like, there are options for him.
Yep.
But bringing that guy back, bringing that catch and shoot guy, bringing that extra ball handler, bringing that outlet for your guys who were, like, you know, driving to the hoop, that opens things up a little bit. And the Celtics' advantages, like I said, they're still there. Horford can still guard Giannis, but mm-hmm. Brogdon is a really, really good player who is having a really, really good season.
Yeah,
and
he is.
I just think, like, you know, this Bucks team is really dangerous, and the Celtics have an advantage right now. They're trying to take, you know, they're trying to really capitalize on it. They did in game one. So, you know, we'll see, but I think getting Brogdon back makes a huge difference, and, you know, Milwaukee's got to feel good about the fact that, like you said, he looked pretty good in that warm-up we saw. It sounds like he's getting back. I think at this point we can probably assume that he's back in game three.
That's, I mean, what I'm going to think, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just reading the tea leaves, and we're not doctors and we don't know anything at all, but it does kind of seem like...
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on a podcast.
Oh, well. I don't even do that. So.
No, I agree. And that, and really the reason why we're talking about the potential for Brogdon playing in game three, like you said, is the importance it puts on game two. If the Celtics can come in and take both games in Milwaukee, that does so much to change the dynamic of Brogdon coming back, because that puts all the pressure on Milwaukee to win both games in Boston. And Boston, even through their worst regular season struggles, was good at home. And to take this Celtics team and to put them at home, that game three is going to be wild. That's going to be wild. The place is going to be juiced. It's an 8 o'clock game on a Friday night. I mean, and you know, you start with the Havlicek tribute. You got a lot of people, like the history, the feelings, the emotion, all of it. It's all going to be there, and I think it's going to be extraordinarily difficult for the Bucks to withstand that. That being said, they are, again, the best team in the NBA, 60-win team. Giannis is Giannis, and you got to think at some point he's going to be able to break through even that stout Celtics defense. But I don't know. There's so many different ways that this game can go.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I would be very surprised, even with all the advantages and with Brogdon out, I would be very surprised if the Celtics won this game. Like, it's, even as focused as they are, as, like, they are saying all the right things, these yep. guys are locked in, they're not giving Milwaukee anything to bite on, anything to take as, like, you know, fuel for their fire.
Mm-hmm.
Brad has called Giannis the MVP roughly 300,000 times at this
yes,
point.
He has. Like, yes, he has.
They have said repeatedly that game one is done. We're on to game two. We're on to game two. Like, game two is important. This is what's important. They have hammered that as hard as they can. And even so, there is still this, like, extra bit of this extra level that a team down 1-0, especially a team at home down 1-0, can find that I just, you know, In the back of their minds, and they would never, like, bring it to the front of their minds, but at the back of their minds, the Celtics know they won game one. They know they came in. They know they did their job. They took home court advantage away from the Bucks. They accomplished that in the first game.
Yep.
And there is always going to be that tiny, tiny little switch of desperation that the Bucks are going to have that is an advantage in this second game. So I really think Milwaukee probably wins this next game. And, you know, I think that's why. And I don't think it's a lack of focus, a lack of anything. I think it's just playoff mentality that kind of puts
sure.
them over the top.
Sure. Look, there's two teams that could play extraordinarily well, and if both teams can play great games, and one team's going to win.
Right.
That's just how it's going to go. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm curious to see what changes. I mean, obviously, but like nobody asked about Nikola Mirotic, who came in the second quarter of game one, just caught fire and brought the entire Bucks team back.
And I want to talk about Mirotic at some point because I think there's an avenue for the Celtics there.
Yeah. All right. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a little break? We'll come back. We'll talk about Mirotic, and we'll see what kind of adjustments might happen in game two. And we'll talk about some of the things that we saw and what might happen here with different lineups and whatnot. So stick around. We'll do that when we come back. Remember, if you're a new listener, go ahead and download that new Himalaya podcast app because it helps curate your podcast feed based on your interests. So you plug in a few of the interests, you subscribe to Locked On Celtics, and it will help you get even more podcasts you might not have been aware of. So go ahead and subscribe to Locked On Celtics there. If you so choose, you can do it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever podcasts exist, or get into your car and ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics. We're coming right back with more on Game 2. So we went into the break. Tom, you said you wanted to talk more about Mirotic. I mean, he was really the bright spot, like the biggest bright spot, I think, for them in his own limited minutes. But he came in, he hit a bunch of shots. I don't know if he's going to hit those shots again. We've seen him get hot against the Celtics before when he was playing in New Orleans. But
we've also seen the Celtics target him over and over and over. And I did not think they did that.
They did not.
Like, I didn't think they did that at all in game one. And that was one of the surprising things to me was coming into the series, I thought there were going to be matchups that the Celtics were really going to try to hammer. And they sort of did. But it was more like the schematic matchup with the Bucks not wanting. In game one, it was more the Bucks aren't going to want to go all the way out to Horford. Horford's going to be able to take advantage and knock down jumpers. It was, you know, guys are going to drop back and they might make mistakes. And then Kyrie Irving has a wide open above the break three, which he's not going to miss. It's stuff like that that they took advantage of, as opposed to here's a guy on the floor that we want to just hammer into a pulp.
Yeah.
And I think that that is coming. I think that if the, you know, Mirotic was the reason that the Celtics just hammered Mirotic, especially in New Orleans.
Oh,
that
my game. God.
Like, they
mercilessly.
It was unkind. And, like, I expect that to happen again. When they acquired him, I was like, well, they got some floor spacing, but the Celtics love playing Nikola Mirotic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought it was really weird watching Mirotic light them up from three and seeing them not target him on the other end. I think it speaks to how confident they were in their pick and pop game plan. But I think if things do start to break down for them, or if he starts to get hot in another game, like, I mean, they're gonna go at him. I mean, he was guarding Jaylen Brown for portions of that game. Jaylen can beat him off the dribble. Like, and, oh, you know,
absolutely.
And you know, Jaylen doesn't have the strongest handle in the world, but like, he can beat Nikola Mirotic. He can punish him and
sure,
you know, could rattle off 6-8 points in a row just doing that. So I think those individual matchups are something that are still exploitable as opposed to just like exploiting sort of the scheme. Guys like Mirotic, guys like Lopez, like those are guys who are still going to struggle in this series. And that's, I think, a real thing for the Celtics to be hopeful about, is they didn't exhaust every option from that perspective.
Right. I mean, I was surprised. I'm sitting there when Mirotic hit his first three, I'm like, that's okay, because here comes the Celtics destroy Mirotic defensively.
Yeah.
And they just never did go at that offensively.
Yeah.
And they just never did. I'm sure there are wrinkles. Like, Brad Stevens isn't just going to be like, let's do everything the exact same. But at the same time,
anybody should be saying, let's not change keep anything doing, right. up. It's not Giannis.
Right. I'm sure, like, if I'm Stevens, I'm looking at it like, okay, if they really want to keep trying the same thing, then we'll roll with it and we'll see how they do with the pick and pops. I don't know how they're going to change the pick and pop defense. Like, they just try to make Kyrie a passer, and he's a very willing passer. He had, what, 10, 11 assists? 11 assists. And six of them went to Al Horford.
Sounds right.
And accounting for the threes, accounted for 15 points. The Celtics will do that again. They'll absolutely do that again. And one thing that I saw the Celtics do, one thing I saw Kyrie do was there was Horford was in the corner and he ball fake, just fake pass and just sent Lopez flying. There now, once you've gotten a team ready for here comes the pick, we're going to double, here comes the pass. So coaching wise, I think, okay, well, they know that the pass is going to go to Horford. So they're going to still try to take Kyrie away. So somebody on the weak side is going to try to blitz that pass. So there's got to be another pass that's available. And maybe it happens once that the Celtics just throw the bait out there and say, all right, we're just going to run our pick and pop. And let's see what happens when we run it once. Does Bledsoe, do we have a guy leave the corner, the guy in the corner, and just shade him up a little bit higher and then try to blitz that pass? Or do they actually play it the same? And Kyrie, he might not even have to make that first pass to Al Horford to see what happens with the defender. He can see where that defender is shading, and he can do a jump pass and then fling it to the corner. And if that's their play to try and take the ball away from Horford, then I don't know. I'm trying to think through the sequence. I think the Celtics just go on and just keep doing the same thing. Just keep doing it. And then the only way to change what they do is to put a new person in that center spot. Maybe they decide, hey, Mirotić was good. Let's start Mirotić. Or, I mean, I think DJ Wilson is the guy that they would probably try to play, but then that takes away that crushes their offense. That crushes their offense because they rely on Lopez for that spacing.
Yeah.
I mean, you just play off of Wilson and then talk about building a wall. Like, whoever, you just leave him alone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. They're in a tough spot. But, you know, and again, I do think that one of the things about a playoff series is that after one game, it's always so easy to just be like, here are all the things that went right. There's no answer for all this stuff. I mean, these coaches all have so many more answers than we do.
Right.
They're going to come up. I truly do think they're going to come up with something. But, you know, I think, but to your point, I think that it's tough to build out a defense and build out a defensive scheme and a defensive game plan that has worked all year. I mean, that's just tough for Milwaukee because now if they are going to try to change things, they have to try to change so much stuff.
And yes.
And that's really hard to do in a, you know, two-game break between games.
You can't do that. It's so hard to do. They have built these habits. The way you get so good at these things is you do the same thing over and over and over and over again all season long. The Bucks have gotten this good defensively because over and over and over again, they bait players into the most inefficient shot. And usually they're daring the worst shooters to take the three. Now they're in a situation where the guy who's setting the pick, who's normally not a great shooter, is a great shooter.
Yeah.
And the way they've played defense, they can go into a break here and practice a couple of things, but like that requires thinking. And you know from playing ball, if you're thinking on the court, you're screwed.
You're done.
If Lopez is sitting there because he sees the guard coming and he's got to drop, he's got to... And if the all of a sudden he's not dropping, then there's going to be a time where he starts to drop and goes, oh, shit, and then go the other way. And it's too late. Then he's completely screwed.
Especially at this level.
Yeah. And all it takes is one little hesitation. It's not like it's not even something that you really notice. It's just a little shift in the weight that allows Kyrie to just boom, hit a gap, and then you're screwed. So I don't know. I feel like Milwaukee's only choice is to really try to do the things that they do like a lot better, or to change the personnel and say, we're going to go with a different group, or just hope that Brogdon coming back is going to be enough.
And maybe what you do is you play more minutes with Giannis at center, and yeah, you know, and you just say, look, like, we know there's going to be guys out there who get blitzed individually, and we're going to hope that hoisting threes and having spacing, and we hope that guys knock them down, and then Giannis gets to the rim because there's a little more spacing because guys are shooting well, you know, and we, you know, we hope that he just has a better game because he's almost certainly not going to have the worst game of his career for the second game in a row.
That's
like,
true. That's like, true.
Maybe that's what they do. And honestly, they're a 60-win team with the MVP, and like, I keep hammering on that, but like, that might work. Like, they're right. So good. Giannis right. Is so freaking good. Like, it really might work. But I think all those concerns about them, you know, going into game two are valid.
All right. Well, we'll have to see how this goes. It's going to be very interesting to see who makes what chess move. And does Budenholzer live up to his reputation of the guy that's too rigid in the postseason?
That would be fascinating in an honest moment, which we won't get because Al is a very good human. And
yes.
Very, like, it would be fascinating to get Al to ask him, like, is that reputation fair?
Yeah. You know?
But
yeah,
that is not something that the Celtics are ever going to flinch on.
He would never say it.
No.
You'd have to, like,
especially
bump it
to him. The Celtics are, like, hammering this, the Bucks are very good, we respect them. Like, they are giving them nothing.
No, there's no level of disrespect. Yeah. Everybody, to a man's like, you know, we did some good things, we did some things well, we can do a lot better.
And the dope thing about this series is that it's still juicy even without any actual juice. Like,
right.
The basketball is just so good that we're always like, oh my goodness. This
coming off the Pacers series.
These aren't the Pacers anymore.
Yeah. Oh my God. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. It's going to be very interesting. So stick around. The post-game podcast will feature, I believe, Sam Jam Packard and Chris Grenham, because we will be knee deep in post game stuff, and I just don't want to record a podcast at 3 a.m.
Shout out to our guy Chris Grenham.
I'm not going to say what I wanted to say. He's a good dude, and I miss him on the beat. I'll just say it like that. So that was fun. I had him on the pod. Was it one of the post Pacers games? He's just a good guy. He's just like one of those just good guys. Hey, you know, you don't encounter many of those good guys on the beat. We're just full of assholes. No, I'm only kidding. Everybody's a good guy. All right, so that'll be the post-game show. Stick around for our coverage, mine and Tom's, on masslive.com/Celtics. Like, seriously, bookmark masslive.com/Celtics because we are pumping out the content. Well, how many things did we write today? I see 10 pieces today.
I have five. Yeah,
we're 5 and 5 today.
Yeah.
10 pieces in a day. So that's a lot of Celtics coverage. There's a lot of great Celtics coverage out there, but we're pumping it out on masslive.com/Celtics. So go and check that out. And of course, subscribe to this podcast if you're a new listener, the Himalaya Podcast app or Google Play, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And you regular listeners, give us that 5-star rating, a good written review, share the podcast, tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.